From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the dramatic legislative push to pass or stop Texas voter restriction bills.
Was there a specific incident, event, or a crime that you witnessed in your time as a candidate or a voter that prompted for you to file this bill?
No, ma'am. But I believe that all voters deserve to have their right to vote to be protected.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. It was at 3 a.m. on Friday that the Republican-backed voter restriction bill won initial approval by the Texas House, but not without some conflict and drama along the way.
Because the Secretary of State's office testified before our committee that very first day, and the Secretary of State said that this 2020 elections was free, fair, safe, and secure. Do you not agree with that, with what the Secretary of State said?
I think that's their opinion, sure.
That you think what?
I believe that's their opinion.
That's their opinion?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think for the most part it was free, fair, and safe, yeah.
Even Democratic lawmakers opposed to HB 6 and SB 7 admitted during the floor debate that Republican support of this Governor Abbott priority item was going to pass this bill, no matter what. But what Democrats had in their favor was the sloppy work of Elections Committee Chairman Briscoe Cain.
In Article 6, Section 4 of the Texas Constitution, the people of Texas delegated their constitutional authority to the legislature to make all laws necessary to detect and punish fraud and preserve the purity of the ballot box. And the legislature shall provide by law for the regulation of all voters.
While defending his bill, Cain continued to appear to be flustered and unprepared to answer questions about how it would be implemented and enforced.
Mr. Cain, why did you file this bill again?
Well, I filed this bill to, ensure that we have a equal and uniform application of our election code and to protect people from being taken advantage of.
The Democrats' strategy was a familiar one. Use House rules and procedures to wear the Republicans down and then negotiate to soften some of the hardest edges of this controversial bill. The Democrats had prepared more than 130 amendments for the bill. Even if every one of them failed to pass, the Dems would have successfully burned through enough hours of floor time, which is a limited and precious commodity at the legislature. And this is time that's also needed to pass other Republican priority items, and the Democrats had another card to play, a point of order made by Democratic Representative John Turner.
Speaker, I raise a point of order against further consideration of Senate Bill 7 under Rule 4, Section 32C of the House Rules on the grounds the bill analysis does not comply with the rule.
Parliamentary points of order are common during debates on controversial and high-stakes bills, and usually they take a few minutes to settle, but this one seemed to be much more substantial. Debate was halted for more than 2 hours. It appeared to be serious and another sign of Cain's lack of attention to detail. It had the potential to torpedo this bill and force it back to committee, which could kill it for this legislative session. But if that were to happen, Governor Greg Abbott could revive the bill during a special session, which is already expected to happen this summer, which will be dealing with redistricting. So the horse trading began. Then the point of order was withdrawn, and Cain took the microphone to address the House.
I move to postpone further consideration of SB 7 until 11:30 p.m. today, currently negotiating on some perfecting amendments.
The bill didn't return to the floor until after 2:30 a.m., and when it did, there was a rush of 19 amendments, most of them offered by Democrats and accepted without objection. The result sliced out far-reaching voter restrictions that voting rights advocates had been objecting to. Also softened were provisions that advocates of voters with disabilities objected to. Lawmakers also changed a part of the bill that enhanced protections for partisan poll watchers and increased penalties for voting-related offenses. While these adjustments toned down the bill that had prompted the loudest outcry from voting rights advocates, it wasn't good enough to win over Democratic votes for the bill's final passage. In the end, the bill passed the House on a party line vote.
There being 81 ayes, 64 nays, SB 7 has passed a third reading.
So what are the main points that remain in the bill that voting rights advocates say will make voting more difficult in the state? it remains illegal to send out unsolicited applications for a mail-in ballot. Voting hours will be limited at polling sites. Drive-through voting is prohibited. Multiple ballot drop-off boxes are outlawed and other provisions. Making any of these items law will do nothing to achieve the stated goal of HB 6 and SB 7, which is to root out voter fraud. The accusation by Democrats is that these voter integrity bills are about making voting more difficult for communities of color and have a partisan motivation to keep the Republican Party in power in a state with changing demographics not favorable to the GOP. And to support that accusation, Democrats point to Florida, where on Thursday, Governor Ron DeSantis signed his voter overhaul bill, which is similar to the Texas bill. DeSantis signed that bill at a Donald Trump fan club and while live on Fox News, after barring the participation and coverage from legitimate news media.
And on that note, let's bring in Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis. Good morning to you, Governor.
Good morning. So right now I have what we think is the strongest election integrity measures in the country. I'm actually going to sign it right here. It's going to take effect. So
there you go.
Bill is signed.
Back at the Texas Capitol in Austin during the Thursday debate, Democratic lawmakers, including Rafael Enchia of Dallas, continued to hammer at Republican Briscoe Kane by drawing attention to the Jim Crow roots of voter restrictions in Texas.
You chose a peculiar term in drafting this bill, and you talked about preserving the purity of the ballot box. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a quotation from the Texas Constitution. It'd be Article 6, Section 4.
Right. And are you aware of the history behind that provision of the Constitution?
I'm not.
Okay. Are you aware that references to, quote, purity of the ballot box used throughout this country's history has been a justification for states to disenfranchise groups they deem unfit to vote or somehow lacking?
I didn't know that. I thought it meant...
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Enchia.
Can you kindly direct our guests in the gallery to refrain from outbursts?
The chair will remind members, guests in the gallery to refrain from outbursts. This is your first warning. Please contain yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Well, so I wasn't aware of that. I guess I thought purity meaning not having fraud in it or something. And,
okay. Are you aware of the 1972 Supreme Court case Dunn versus Blumenstein?
I'm not.
All right. In that case, they noted that statements, quote, related to the preservation of purity at the ballot box, while a formidable sounding state interest, cannot be used to justify any and all voting requirements that a state might think up, end quote. Did you run across this explanation when you specifically used that term?
No, not at all.
What was your motivation for using that term purity at the ballot box? Because that's a specific set of words that has a lot of meaning in state history.
Well,
what was your intention?
I'm going to answer for you. You know, you may have figured it out by now. I really like the state constitution, and I think as a legislative body, just as Congress should, they should be looking for their authority from their charter, from the thing that gives them power. And so when we're looking at what authorizes us, right, the sovereign people of the state of Texas who delegated their authority to through the Constitution, we then should look to the Constitution and say, what gives us authority to do anything on this issue? And that's the provision that does that, and so that would be why.
And do you know what the motivation was for that Texas Constitution? And you're referring specifically to the Texas Constitution of 1876, correct?
Yeah, our current Constitution, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Did you look at the history before using that word?
No. The only thing, if we were to have a discussion, maybe over some coffee or a drink, somebody, I could go into the details of Article 1 really well. I've read the debates in the journals of the convention of 1875 on that for that thing, but I'm not familiar with the
you
one.
You may have missed it then.
Article 6.
And this would have been very obvious, I think, to anybody who looked at that and looked at that language. And that provision was drafted specifically to disenfranchised black people, black voters, in fact, following the Civil War. Did you know that?
No, I'm sorry to hear that.
And are you familiar with white primaries?
We've heard and read of such things.
Have you read about those?
That's a disgusting thing, yes.
Did you realize that that purity of the ballot box language in the Texas Constitution gave rise to all white primaries?
No, I didn't.
And did you know that this purity at the ballot box justification was also used during the Jim Crow era to prevent black people from voting?
Democratic Representative Chris Turner on the House floor also laid out the history of Texas with racially motivated voter suppression.
I'm speaking in favor of this amendment to strike the enacting clause today for several reasons. I'd like to take a few moments to talk about what is really framing this debate that we're having this evening. First of all, none of us should get lost in the partisanship of all this. And make no mistake, the backers of this election bill believe it'll help Republicans and hurt Democrats. We all know that. And, you know, we'll have a lot of votes today, and a lot of them probably fall along party lines. That's no surprise. But that is not why this bill is so insidious, and that's not why so many of us oppose it with the intensity that we do. The theory driving this bill and the provisions themselves in the bill are designed and intended to undermine and suppress participation in elections by black Texans, Latino Texans, the Asian American community, and folks who have a disability. It's a straight-up assault on voting rights. Key provisions of this bill will almost certainly be overturned by the courts. And if the John Lewis Voting Rights Act reauthorization legislation is adopted in the federal level, it is likely that all or nearly all the provisions of this bill would fail a fair voting rights preclearance review. Now, all of us coming into this debate are aware, or should be aware, of our state's shameful history of intentional discrimination. Since 2011, the last decade, federal courts have ruled nearly a half dozen times that state leaders violated the Voting Rights Act and the Constitution. The courts further ruled that they did not do it benignly or inadvertently. The court ruled time and again that the discrimination was done intentionally to harm minority Texans. All three redistricting maps enacted in 2011 ruled to be discriminatory in effect and adopted with discriminatory intent. A voter ID requirement was imposed in 2011. State leaders pushed this legislation in a clearly discriminatory fashion with discriminatory intent. One federal judge even called the Texas voter ID bill in 2011 a modern-day poll tax. State leaders have used the big lie of widespread voter fraud to justify vote suppression for a long time now. When he was Attorney General in 2006, Governor Abbott converted federal funds intended to monitor cyber crimes to launch a so-called voter fraud task force that targeted almost exclusively Latino and black voters. His office even used sickle cell stamps and pictures of African Americans standing in line to vote as indicators of suspicious voting behavior. The effort wasn't just a bust, it was a total sham. No widespread or significant voter fraud of any type was ever uncovered. What was accomplished? They created an atmosphere of fear in minority communities about voting. As we know more recently from the Houston Chronicle, General Paxton recently spent 22,000 staff hours investigating so-called voter fraud and only found 16 instances. In each incidence of fraud was a voter listing the wrong address on their voter registration card. Last cycle, 2 years ago, Governor Abbott, General Paxton, the Secretary of State at the time, hashed a scheme to purge thousands and thousands of Latino Texans from the voter rolls. It took a lawsuit and a federal court order to stop them, to stop that illegal purge. So the pattern is established, it is clear, and it is very recent. Our state leaders repeatedly take actions to limit and suppress Texans' voting rights in violation of the law. And they force African Americans and Latinos and other minority Texans to go to court to defend basic voting rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution. But it hasn't stopped there. Recent history, Attorney General Paxton, with the support of the governor and others, used our tax funds and the good name of the state of Texas to try and overturn the free and fair election of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris by attacking the voting laws of other states. The lawsuit was ridiculous, was immediately rejected by the United States Supreme Court, a court dominated, by the way, with Republican president's appointees. As we know, General Paxton was in Washington, helped rally the mob on January 6th that eventually stormed the Capitol, used flagpoles to beat police officers. So that brings us to where we are today in this legislative session. In the effort to impose a whole series of voting restrictions on Texans, from the beginning, it's been an exercise in arrogance, exclusion, and confusion. Texas is a majority-minority state where residents of color now significantly outnumber Anglos. Texas has the second highest number of Latino residents at just under 12 million and the highest number of African-American residents in the nation with nearly 4 million. Those Texans are in every part of our state but concentrated in the five big counties. And that's where the primary focus of this bill just happens to be: Harris County, Dallas County, Bexar County, Travis, and Tarrant. Whites make up the minority population of all those counties. And efforts to limit or restrict voting in these counties has a disproportionate impact on Latino, Black, and other minority voters. As mentioned earlier, Texas has a terrible history, not just from 50 years ago, but in recent years of engaging in intentional discrimination. One of the more damning provisions of this bill, which is why we need to adopt this amendment, is already playing out like a voter suppression story from the 1950s. The provision designed to harass and intimidate election workers and voters within the polling place itself. Partisan poll watchers would be empowered to roam throughout the polling place, imposing their own partisan views on the administration of elections. They would even have a hotline to the Attorney General's office to make unsubstantiated accusations. Partisan ideologues intent on voter suppression are already at work planning to disrupt voting in heavily minority precincts. A leaked audio of partisan Republican operatives planning voter harassment and recruiting poll watchers from primarily Anglo areas in Harris County to go into and disrupt voting in primarily minority areas in Harris County has already surfaced. Many people have seen it. It's all over social media. I remember in 1998, when I was a young campaign worker in Tarrant County, sitting in an elections commission meeting with the then chair of the Tarrant County Republican Party. And subject poll watchers came up, and the elections administrator said, well, is either party planning on appointing poll watchers for the general election? I said, we hadn't planned on it. The Republican chairman said, well, we're probably going to have some poll watchers in the problem areas. And I asked, what are those problem areas? He said, well, you know, Southeast Fort Worth. Southeast Fort Worth is District 95, represented by Chairwoman Collier. Those were the problem areas that the Republican Party wanted to send the poll watchers into to harass and intimidate voters. Now, the 67 members of the Democratic caucus come from all over the state. We're diverse by region, by race, and ideology. And you see that on votes on this floor. But we all share a very important fact when it comes to this bill. We are each the candidate of choice of the minority voters within our districts, and they are who elects us. And we reflect this as their successful ability to choose their representatives and elect the candidates of their choice. So don't think this debate is about Democrats and Republicans. It's about state leaders in the name of the state of Texas squaring off to undermine the voting rights of Texas voters of color. We've all become too used to the term discriminatory intent being used in a legal opinion describing the actions of the Texas legislature. If you want to know what discriminatory intent looks like in real time, pay attention to how our state and legislative leaders are handling this legislation on this floor today.
Pro-democracy organizations across the country are calling out Texas Republican leadership for pushing bills that will weaken democracy in Texas. This means that the state legislature will ignore the will of the people to pass unpopular laws and ignore the true needs of the state. Sarah Walker is the executive director of Secure Democracy.
And again, the legislature is passing legislation that affects the freedom to vote for all citizens of Texas at the wee hours of night with the fewest eyes and accountability upon them.
So what do you think we ended up with?
Well, what we ended up with is an amended version of the Senate bill. And so in that our major concerns about this bill are the insertion of hyperpartisanship into the elections process. I don't know any American and any Texan who thinks we should be going in a more partisan direction. We are also fundamentally concerned about the way that there is criminalization of election judges, elections administrators, and voters for making small mistakes. And I'll just give a few examples. One is they want to be able to prosecute election judges in polling locations for criminal offenses when they remove unruly and disruptive partisan poll watchers. This doesn't make any sense, especially based on what we saw in this last election. The entire election season was filled with one of the most partisan and vitriolic elections ever, and I don't think we want to head more in that direction. We're also concerned because it allows for the prosecution of members of community organizations who assist voters in casting their ballots in person or by mail, and this really will disadvantage the disabled communities in Texas and make people scared to provide basic assistance for those that we care about and love and should be supporting as a community. It also exposes any person helping a voter mail their ballot to a felony prosecution, including family members interested in helping a voter cast the ballot. This, again, just doesn't make sense. And because they adopted much of Senate Bill 7, one of the other concerns is that it really eliminates discretion of local elections officials to provide alternate voting locations to meet the needs of their diverse populations. It would actually lead to fewer and smaller polling locations in the most populous areas of metropolitan counties. And this is despite our poll finding that 84% of Texans actually believe that we should be providing more polling options and expanding early voting rather than reducing it.
We've heard from the Republican leadership that they want these bills to become law because they believe in democracy. And they're pushing democratic ideals and principles. But do you think they've actually followed those ideals and principles in passing these and crafting these bills?
Well, I'll have to say right now that no, they are not doing a very good job because the fundamental democratic principle is following the will of the people. And in fact, the will of the people who elected and who are you supposed to be representing. And again, what all of our research has shown is they're headed in the wrong direction. There is not support for criminalization amongst Texas citizens. In a time period in which Texas is moving away from criminalization in so many areas, why would we be adding more criminal penalties for simple mistakes? It's also not following democratic principles to insert hyperpartisanship into the electoral process, the elections administration process. Elections administration in our country has worked for years, for a century, because we have stayed true to nonpartisan values in election administration. If you want to undermine democracy and create confusion and possible voter intimidation at the polls, the way to do it is exactly what they are doing. So I do not think right now that democratic values are being upheld in what they are doing.
Well, we've also seen the chairman of the House Elections Committee, Briscoe Cain, pull maneuvers to sidestep public hearings for SB 7 by substituting the language with HB 6. And he's done other maneuvers that have also limited public participation in these in this process. Is that contradictory?
Well, of course it's contradictory. The reality is that if Republicans in Texas believe that they are upholding democratic values, they should be transparent in the way that they are enacting laws and be providing the most options for input and for review of the language that they are suggesting. And the fact that they are sidestepping a lot of the process is deeply concerning and goes against any suggestion that this is upholding democratic principles. I will also add that another concern is that given that the version of the bill passed in the Senate and the version of the bill in the House are now fundamentally different, the bill will likely go to conference committee unless the Senate adopts it. And we all know that when things go to conference committee, fewer members have a say in the process and there is less transparency for the public.
So it could still morph into something very different. Amendments that were passed Thursday night, Friday morning, to soften the bill, those could be put back in.
Yes. And so our hope is, while there was, I would say the bill was made a little bit worse. Oh, no, I'm sorry. The bill was made a little bit better.
Or a little bit less worse.
Yes, a little bit less worse is what I was trying to say. But that being said, yes, they reduced some of the felony crimes to misdemeanors. They also added a few good provisions, things that we care about deeply. One is ballot tracking, and that does actually modernize the election system. It also increases transparency and trust because voters can actually watch their ballots be processed through an electronic system. And we also do think it's good that they adopted a comprehensive ballot cure process for people who make simple mistakes so that they can be notified and have an opportunity to fix it. Now, that being said, while there were some positive steps in the right direction, at the end of the day, there are still criminal penalties inserted, still the interjection of partisanship. And so our hope is that in whatever process that follows, whether it be in conference committee or in the Senate, our hope is that they will continue to listen to the voice of Texans and actually mitigate more of this, the terrible aspects of this bill.
So the big question that people have is, does this bill actually do what its opponents say that it does, that it makes voting harder? And to what extent, and if it does do that to people who typically vote for Democrats, is this bill going to actually help keep Republicans in power in Texas while we're seeing all these demographic changes?
Well, I guess the first thing I'd say is that as we witnessed this last election, first of all, there were surprising demographic changes in the electorate. For example, a large percentage of Hispanic voters in Texas voted for Donald Trump. Number two, overwhelmingly, Texas had, for Republicans, they had a stellar year. Trump was their choice, and the House, the legislature, didn't really lose any seats. And so it's confusing to me why they would be making this, and no one should be making assumptions that demography is destiny. What that is doing is writing off a huge portion of the population. The other thing I would say is that as we've seen across the country, some of these laws and suggestions that are being inserted into the national conversation would create barriers to voting for seniors, veterans, and disabled Texans. But I would particularly say veterans overwhelmingly have supported Republicans in Texas. So why would you create additional barriers? And likewise for seniors. And so there are things that are contrary. What they're doing is caving to the most partisan elements of their party. In the long run, they might be working against their own interests. But there's no one who benefits from making it more difficult for a disabled Texan to be able to vote. And these things don't make any sense. And I would also just say that a lot of the advocates are coming, like our organization, aren't coming from a partisan angle. We're not looking to make it easier for one party or the other. We're prioritizing the voter and the voter experience. And overwhelmingly, Texans said they had a good experience in their elections. So the whole premise and why this was made a priority is extremely confusing.
Sarah Walker is the executive director of Secure Democracy. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page or on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.